Well, it's time for In the Chains, the UK-based podcast for amateur disc golfers. Get ready for course reviews, disc reviews, and the latest news and updates from the disc golf world. Your hosts will also talk about their own progression and have a lot of fun along the way. And now, here they are, two Brits and one Yank. Let's get started.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to a brand new episode of In the Chains.
You're in a good mood this week.
I am in a good mood. I'm in a very jolly mood.
Oh, man.
Flamboyant.
Yeah. It was. It's got something to do with Liverpool winning a cup yesterday, so I was pretty pleased with that. So you might hear a little bit of difference in my voice. Might be a bit hoarse.
Is it a proper cup? Is it a proper cup?
Well, it is if you win it.
Blues won it in 2011. Is it?
Well, there you go. Did you celebrate then?
Yeah, but everyone.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's a proper cup, isn't it?
It's not a proper cup.
Well, it's not. It's not the best one to win, but it's still a cup to win, isn't it?
Yeah.
Speaking of Blues, I'm watching the Rooney documentary.
Oh yeah, is that on Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Is any good?
It's pretty good. I mean, I didn't know anything about it, obviously, but yeah, it's pretty good.
He loves the older woman.
Yeah, has it got the bit in there about when he was shagging grannies?
No, not yet.
No. That'll be an interesting episode.
Okay. About halfway through, so.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see it turning that way, but.
Yeah, well, there you go. There's a plot twist for you.
Wow.
So, I haven't done the normal introduction. On the T-pad with me tonight, we have Mr. Joshua R. Birmingham.
Joshua R.
Wagwan. And Mr. Thomas Bowen, who's a bit subdued today because he's got to be careful of his volume levels.
Yes.
Because he's recording in his lovely girlfriend's house.
So, yeah.
He's got a really nice background, looking very professional.
It looks better than, like, say like a drug den's wall with a mattress on the floor, doesn't it? It is an improvement on that. So.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How do we know he hasn't just painted a square behind him?
Yeah, the outside of that square is beige. I've had a good day yesterday down at Wembley. Watching Liverpool win. What about you, Josh? You been up too much?
Played a few rounds at Croydon on Friday.
Good, bad, ugly?
Well, I played about 70 or so holes.
Oh, okay.
So if you do the math on that, I am tired.
Yeah. I could imagine.
Went out and played a little bit more today. Just took the putters out just to try to get some touch practice. Not just rip it on drivers, but because Wembley Open's coming up soon. Hopefully I get to play it.
How do you do that then, Josh? Do you just go out and throw putters on the normal championship course, or do you play the short course and use the putters, or what?
Yeah, I normally just play the short course just to get this good approach practice, because every shot is an approach, basically. You know, you're throwing 30, 40 meters. So just get out the zones on the forehands and throw some backhand like putter shots and just, get the short game working, because if I can do that, you know, less chance of me making a long putt. So
yeah,
is that more important than trying to boom the drives?
I think so.
They say in ball golf, don't they? Drive for show, putt for dough.
Yeah.
So that's. I think that's pretty relevant in disc golf as well. It's something that I've tried to do in the off season. It's like the distance for me I struggle with is like maybe like 50 meters, something like that.
Because it feels like it's in the middle of a sort of shot.
And I just that is where I lose the majority of my errant shots in tournaments at that distance, because what I'll do is I'll throw into the basket, I'll leave myself a longish putt. and then miss that putt and then just tap it in. And I think if I would have just got close with an easier shot from 50 metres, I could have just tapped it in. And do you know what I mean? And like, I always carry a shot on that.
Is it a thing of you're afraid to put like full commit to it and get to the basket? Are you coming up short?
I think it's like the touchiness of it. I can't. I end up short, I end up left, I end up thrown into the floor, I end up long. I just can't get... It's a struggle with that touch. So that's something I've been trying to work on during the off-season. It's not where I'd want it to be, but it's certainly better than it was before for the end of the season. So.
Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but on your approach shot, you don't actually... You want to land it short to the basket, don't you? Oh,
Just depends on the situation. If that's leaving you a death putt, say there's a big hill behind the basket, you might want to be as close as you can or a little behind it so you're going back up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just depends.
Because I generally find that I aim straight for the basket and then overshoot and then have a comeback putt then.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, you know, depend on the situation. And then if you're laying it up, you just I kind of aim for the pole, basically. Or, right. You know, not the basket or the chains, but something I know is going to slide up, you know, about where I'm aiming, hopefully. Yeah.
What sort of distance are you laying up from? When are you actually running a putt? And when are you?
I think it's the circumstances more so than distance.
I can putt from a little over 100 feet, you know, jumping or... So it's between that and about, I'd say, 250 feels like, you know, you can get there with a zone or something, approach type disc.
Yeah.
Anything outside of that, you might have to go fairway.
Yeah.
Unless you're just ripping on it, straight shot or something.
What about you, Bone? What have you been up to? Been up to much?
Not especially, not in disc golf world. I've just been busy. Like, I got crashed into. I don't know if I told you to this.
No, you haven't.
No.
I was up at my mum's. My mum lives in Derbyshire. I was up hers last weekend. And just, it's a good job I saved this because I've got the look that you two look like. Your ears are pricked up like so.
Yeah, they have.
I was driving down. I'd left my daughter with her granddad. I was driving my mum down to the shops in Ashbourne, because she lives in a little village just outside Ashbourne in Derbyshire. Going along the road, literally behind two cars, and this car just pulls out off a gateway into the side of the van.
Whoa.
Like, literally just straight into the side, dents both doors, makes a bit of a mess. Nothing too bad, but claimed he didn't see a big red van driving down the road.
But he saw the other two cars.
Mm. So what I realised he must have done is he was looking to his right, which is the direction I was coming from. He was looking to his right, saw the two cars, looked to his left, saw the left was clear, and just pulled out.
Because the two cars had gone, he just pulled out, yeah.
Yeah.
This has no sort of... It's just a pure coincidence. It's nothing to do with the fact that your actual van that you've been talking about for the past fucking 6 months and been so excited about getting a fucking van has been delayed. This isn't an attempt to speed that process up, is it?
No, not at all.
Sabotaging a company van. Huh?
No, the bloke's already admitted liability. It's all going through insurance. I am deeply annoyed, but it's just a time to read. The government blames COVID. They're blaming the chip shortage because there's fires in China. But basically, I think the lizards are taking over.
Yeah. It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Can't get a van. You can't literally get a van. No one wants vans. And now you can't even get them in the country.
Yeah.
I heard there's like an 18-month wait for lorries now.
Talking of lizard people... I did watch a bit of a documentary on David Icke the other day. Have you ever heard of David Icke, Josh?
No.
He's a nut job. But
Bowen definitely has, hasn't he?
Yeah. He's one who invented this reptilian lizard people, isn't he?
Yeah, shapeshifting lizards.
Yeah.
That rule the world. He was actually like he was a professional goalkeeper of like I don't know who he played for. But was he was
British?
Like Yeah.
From
Isle of Wight, I think. No, wow. Isle of Wight.
That explains why he's nuts.
But he played he played professional football in goal, and he had to like retire early because of arthritis, and then he became like a TV presenter, and then turned just a complete sort of whack job, basically. Do actually agree with David Icke, don't listen to me saying whack job. Insert your own thoughts, sir.
We're trying to be inclusive.
Did he discover that they're reptilians whilst working in the TV industry?
That's what I'm thinking. He's probably hanging out, you know, got to meet some 1%ers and heard the truth, you know, from the people that run the shit.
Initially, they sort of ridiculed him because he had the epiphany that he was the second coming of Jesus Christ or second son of God. While shopping in the Isle of Wight, just in a newsagent. So it's just totally random. But when you said lizard people, I thought, oh, I'll bring that up. But
yeah. I mean, you have a beautiful country, but if I was the second coming of Jesus, don't know I'd be hanging out in the UK.
Where would you be? America, of course, because you're the best, aren't you, Josh?
It's the greatest.
I mean, yeah, Florida. I'm just kidding.
Florida's fucking.
No. That's where the lizard people want to be.
And another tangent. In regards to Florida, have you ever Googled your name? Have you ever done the Florida man thing?
No,
you've never done that. So you put your birthday in. So like, mine's the 11th of July. So I put the 11th of July, Florida man, and then you read the first article. And they're like absolutely fucking crazy.
All right,
May the 3rd. What
sounds fun?
Florida man. you've got to smoke a bowl with me, please. Florida man invites police to smoke pot while showing off his marijuana plant.
What's yours, Josh?
Florida man charged for sexually assaulting a stuffed Olaf from Frozen.
Do you know what mine is?
Let it go.
Florida man with no arms charged with stabbing man with scissors.
We shouldn't laugh about that.
We should have. But I'd be interested to hear what other people's Florida men are. This wasn't planned. It's just something that sprung into my head. Yeah. So I'm conscious of talking about the big talking point, the tournament on the weekend, until Bowen's done his new segment.
Thank you.
Out of courtesy. There you go. So stop your moaning at me. But I have got quite an interesting question to ask you two to see what your opinion is on it. Come to me when I was watching the disc golf on the weekend. But I played... Because nobody will ask me anyway. So I played Arrow Valley with a mate. played average, really. But it was nice because I haven't been able to play the last couple of weeks.
Was it Ben?
Yeah, Bennett.
Is he back in the country?
He's back in the country.
Why don't you tell that story? No one's going to laugh because I don't know Bennett, do
they? No, they don't know Bennett. So, to be fair, it will take some of the funniness away. But he lost his passport when he went skiing and he had to travel by train or car, I don't know which, to Paris to the embassy to get like papers to travel back into the country. So a cheap skiing holiday, which ended up costing him like about £400 or £500 more. But if you knew Bennett, it would be funnier because it's just something he would do.
Didn't he leave his luggage somewhere before? He's done something.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm sure he has. So played that and I put it really well again. I'm really, really confident. I feel like I've finally found my putter, which is the MV.
Until next week.
I'm feeling really good about it, Bowen. Still, every time I've played like four times with it now, and every time I've come away thinking, fuck, my putting's been really, really good.
Why don't you try the Nomad? Or have you tried the Nomad?
Why are you trying to stop me from putting with what I've said I'm really good at.
Because a Nomad's a more legitimate putting putter.
It doesn't matter. If it goes in the basket, it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah. James Conrad said the Envy can handle putting.
Is that what he said?
That's what he says.
Did he actually?
It can handle anything.
Anything.
What about playing a good shot with it, though?
No, it's a good point. Good point, well made. That's probably because you don't watch professional disc golf, but then do the news on a disc golf podcast.
I'm just going to throw it out. I watched a single shot from this.
I knew he would know. And yeah, he's doing the news. Though. So
just go back and watch all the Jomez ones. It's a good one.
I'm getting a bit sick of watching professional disc golf. I don't know why. It's just
you've been in a right funny mood the last couple of weeks. You have.
I'm going to bring down everyone. I'm going to take everyone down.
You're still buying a lot of Frisbees, though.
I'm not buying any. Two. But I've sold one. I sold a Night Strike. I bought a mint green Spare. And I bought a Thunderbird as well.
You haven't played much, you said, Bowen.
No, what were we talking about before that? What were
you being a miserable bastard.
Yeah, I'm all right.
For the past couple of weeks.
Buying discs, yeah. So, and then the other discs that I've acquired were acquired by trading. So I've acquired another mint green Spare for a swap for a Get Freaky Zone. And then nice. I acquired a three disc combination, one of them being a Four Claw Buzz from my main man Max.
I did see those. That looks sweet.
Yeah, and that was for something I've already sent him, which was a mint green Rico and another Rico that he wanted. Well, so there we go.
Is he gonna eventually have the full mint bag and go play?
I think he's already got it. Honestly, I think he's already got it.
I've just imagined somebody playing with a full mint green bag.
Well, the bag alone will cost you $1,000 to replace.
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh my God. And he puts with that, Max does.
Yeah,
you're not going to lose it.
He puts with the Rico, don't he? The FR Rico. But you're not going to lose your putting putters, are you?
No, at British Champs, he was putting with the Berg, I'm sure he was. I'm sure he was.
Because it was windy or something?
I don't know. I just remember somebody who was on our car, because I was on the same card as Max, saying, well, is that a fake mint, is it? Because it's obviously not a real one. And he goes, no, it's a real one. And the bloke's face is like, what?
if it's that expensive, I almost want to throw it.
Yeah. Just to piss people off.
No, just because it's a special disc.
Yeah.
It's like, why let it sit in the closet?
Talking about special discs. Oh, go on. I was going to say.
No, if I had something like that, I would want it to be a putting putter, because I don't feel as if I could lose a putting putter. I think you've got to be pretty...
You just have to watch who you're playing with.
What is that? In case it gets pinched.
Somebody's going to nick it.
Yeah.
Yes. Talking about expensive discs, has anyone been on the Nate Sexton collectors page?
Oh, I see that. 2015 one?
No. There was a... It was a Glow Firebird. So it was... I'm guessing it must have been... I don't know who runs a Glow Firebird. It was Marway last year. But it was like a Glow Firebird with the Las Vegas Challenge double stamp. And last time I checked, it was being auctioned at $3,333.
That's crazy for a piece of plastic. It's just mental, isn't it?
The most I ever remember was a Jelly Bean Iron Samurai for $3,500. That's the most obvious, but I'm sure
it's not even an old disc; it's a new disc.
But there's only five in existence.
Wow,
it's just mental, though, isn't it?
I don't really care about that.
I see. I described this. I was talking to somebody who plays casually with me. He hadn't played tournaments or anything like that. And I was talking to him about sort of collectible discs and stuff. And I said, it's basically like a subgenre of disc golf where it's a bit like Pokemon cards. It's like you collect all these Pokemon cards, and like some of them, like a Chinese Charizard or whatever, can fetch thousands of pounds. I just know that's a valuable one. And like, yeah, it doesn't really serve any function differently to any other card, really.
Is it like NFTs? It's like it's only worth the value people put on it.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Should we create NFTs?
Maybe.
No. Wait, I was trying to come up with a nice saying of the acronym, but never mind.
I was thinking rare discs. If we take photos of rare discs and create NFTs, you can only NFT. But I don't know how copyright would work.
But if there are photos and our discs,
don't we own them?
I don't know. I think so. Well, I don't know. We'll see. Well, coming soon to inthechainshop.com. Right, on that note, before we go over to the news, we'll just have a quick word from our sponsor, Upper Park.
Since 2011, Upper Park Disc Golf has focused on disc golf bags and accessories with unique styles, innovative designs, and unmatched comfort. They use cutting-edge design techniques and durable outdoor materials with a lifetime guarantee, so you can focus on what really matters, keeping it in the chains. Whether you're a Bowen or a seasoned pro, Upper Park has the bag to fit your needs. Go to upperparkdiscgolf.com today and save 10% with our code INTHECHAINS10. Now back to the show.
Excellent. Right, over to Josh's favorite part of the show.
Bowen's fake news. News. Fake news.
Right, so news from the 28th of February 2022. Oh,
he's gone very formal.
I've typed this up this week, but in sort of
Florida rhythm. Man found naked in.
So, the season is finally upon us, and the DGPT has kicked off with its first regular, in inverted commas, tournament. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah.
Yes.
That is factually accurate.
Thank you. I've got something right. It was the Las Vegas Challenge this weekend, just gone, and it looked like a good tournament, to be fair. I've already said I haven't watched it, but I've had a look at the results. And I did keep up to date with the results over the weekend as well. So I looked at the scores just to see how everything was going. The men's was a tough fought battle with a lot of players right up there, wasn't it?
Yep. It's a good mix of dudes at the top. I mean, it kind of came down to two in the end.
And I'm going to talk about...
Very exciting.
He didn't win, but it's probably the most impressive out of everyone. And that was Gannon Burr. 16, isn't it?
Yep, 16. About 7 feet tall and about 2 inches thick. He's like a string bean.
Yeah.
he's massive.
You think with his form, he would just crush it miles. Where he can throw it a long way, but I was really impressed with his putting, and like there was a lot of times when there was a lot of pressure on the putts and stuff like that, and it didn't seem to faze him at all. Whether he hasn't had the heartbreak yet to worry about the consequences, maybe.
I think that every time like a young player gets hot on the putter, especially when like he's banging 3 or 4 death putts in a row that just hit dead center chains, you're like, he just doesn't have the fear of life in him yet.
Yeah.
Like, enough bad things haven't happened to him yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you love to see it. Honestly, I was pulling for Drew the whole time, so it was very exciting to see him come back at the end.
Do you like Drew, do you?
I don't know him, but in some of his Instagram posts, he seems a bit cocky, but I think he is actually a really nice guy to all the players, and I think he's just competitive and... Dude's got swag.
And he throws
Penrose.
Yes.
Well, he putts with him, which is really fun for me because I think he's just about the only one on tour probably using them for putting.
Yeah.
But he makes them look good. And his last, that last hole he played when he laid up on the par four was just super smart because, you know, Gannon already put it in the bunker and he's like, look, he could still get a birdie, but I want to control the way I'm getting this birdie.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, yeah, I think he played really well and he was under the gun, you know, the whole time towards the end and made it happen. So I mean, good for him.
Drew Gibson.
Hole 18 with Gannon's sort of approach shot, I kind of felt sorry for him a little bit because he did seem to skip on unnaturally long. I know you got that big bank to hit the bank and sort of skid up a little bit and play it safe, but like it did feel like it did sort of glide on unnaturally long to go over.
It was a bit unexpected, and you know, he had the confidence behind the shot to get to the basket almost perfectly. But I mean, that's just how those greens play. And, you know, yeah, he messed it up. It was very close. I mean, 1 ounce less of power. It's under the pin. You know?
It was very entertaining to watch. But all the way through the first, well, from the first day, really, there was about 12, 15 people who were in like a shot or two of the lead. And it's like, even like in the middle of the third day, you wouldn't have been able to pick somebody to guarantee to win, because there was just so many people vying for that top spot, which is exactly what us as new sort of neutrals or fans want to see, isn't it?
And that's, it keeps happening more and more every year too. So that's just great because there's just more talent coming in. So it's not like your same five guys every time, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Josh. Carry on.
I was just saying the biggest star of the weekend was Gannon Burr's chalk bag. It had more screen time than anybody.
I didn't see it. What was so good about it?
Every time he'd take a putt, he'd like run up to about where the basket was and just like shoot some chalk into the air instead of like the grass, you know, and so see the wind direction. And then he'd get back and do his routine, chalk bag 3 or 4 times, toss it on the ground, get ready to putt. And then almost every time before he'd actually take the putt, he would have to reach back down one more time.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, man, he's taking forever.
I thought the PTGA were banning chalk.
I don't know.
I'm sure I read somewhere that they're banning chalk.
Must be.
You're not allowed liquid chalk. I know that.
Oh, I don't know. No, he was just like shooting it up into the air, just like the whole time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of clever, but I just got tired of waiting on him to do it every time, honestly. But you know, that's live golf, I guess.
Yeah. And then the FPO. The FPO is really good.
Thunder.
Go on, Bo. You haven't got the results out for that. Go on.
What, for the women's?
Yeah.
It was like, I'm surprised as anyone, because Kat made a big move in the off season to DGA, but she won with one stroke over Paige, like for a brand new bag that I'd say she's only been with them a month. She hasn't been with them long, has she?
No, yeah.
I mean, I imagine she probably had the disc longer than a month, though.
Yeah.
She would have known that was in the works and probably would have been practicing.
Get to throw any other molds from any other brands?
I don't think so,
but I wouldn't say for definite. I couldn't say for definite, but I wouldn't have thought so, because they've got quite a big range, I think, DGA.
Yeah, they've been around a while.
Because Andrew Marweed went to them as well, didn't he, in the off-season? Yeah, he did.
But
making a push.
She's done amazing to think that she's gone to a new sponsor and wins the first major tournament of the year, beats her nemesis Paige. And then, like, one of our favourite players pushed for third place, didn't she? Me and you, anyway, Duff.
Yeah.
Kristen Tatar, because she's European. She came third, admittedly.
Why can't I like her?
Because you're not European. You're not European.
Yeah.
I love it when she comes over and smashes.
I was going to say, in the NPO field as well, how nice was it to see Europeans finally be able to sort of go back over and compete, and I just really, really liked it.
I felt so bad for Seppo that round,
because he was smashing after the first round, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And,
what went wrong?
I think the cameras got to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the whole thing, like back in the States, cameras on, feature card, you know.
It just, Seppo can throw quite a distance, can't he?
Yeah, he's a masher. Yeah.
That's the only thing. Like Drew Gibson, he's known for throwing it quite a long way, isn't he? It's, are you a bit like, you're going how amazing it is, but like, wasn't it last week we were saying we're not that bothered by last week? Was that us saying we're not bothered on the podcast?
I think it wasn't really the course, because honestly, the courses are kind of boring to watch. I think it was just the tightness of the field made it exciting.
Yeah,
because,
you know, I agree.
You know, a 30-foot putt now means a lot. So, you know, it's not really the course itself, but just the fact that everyone was so grouped together.
What you're saying is competition's getting better, the standard's picking up.
Yeah.
Where was Paul this weekend? I noticed he wasn't there. Where was he? Does anyone know?
He didn't play. I think he said that he didn't want to play in a tournament, that he had to practice for three different courses.
Is that genuinely what he said?
I don't know if it was a direct quote or what somebody had put in regards to why he wasn't playing.
But don't they do that multiple times in the season? Does he not?
I don't know, but if you remember back to last season, they had a bit of a kerfuffle, didn't they? Brody made a massive meal out of it because Paul and Brody wanted to film their practice round and was told that they couldn't. I don't know if you can remember that.
Because Innova was sponsoring it.
Yeah, but then Innova said, no, we didn't say that. And it just caused a bit of a hoo-ha sort of thing. And I wonder whether it stems from that, whether he just says, oh, I'm not going to play in your tournament then.
Well, Paul's kind of separated himself from Birdie a little bit, at least with the company, right?
Like, yeah. Well, he's not been on so many.
You don't see them hanging out that much anymore.
Not on many videos, no.
Brody's sort of becoming irrelevant.
Paul's too quiet. I feel like he didn't. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to. I'm making all this up.
What's the conspiracy?
I don't know if they're hanging out. I just think Paul's like, I can't take this loudmouth all the time.
How do you think I feel with Duffy?
Yeah. I think the listeners probably agree with that as well.
By the way, Brody, if you're listening, you're not, but I don't hate you. I just don't think Paul wants to hang out with you.
If you are, I do hate you.
Brody, if you're listening, Paul hates you.
But your mom loves you.
Your mom loves you. And that's what I was going to say, because Gannon Burr, his mom, I think it was his mom was the caddy. She drives
his girlfriend.
Was he with Trudy? Yeah.
she drives him around the country, I think, because obviously how young he is. So it's quite cool to see sort of the mom on the bag. It's nice to see sort of that somebody have really like good relationship with their mom, sort of thing, in that respect.
Yeah, I kind of cried a little bit. My mom hates me.
It's all right when you're 16. It's as you're getting older, it is a bit more tragic. He's probably got a couple of years left.
I was going to say, Bowen.
Yeah.
I mean, all joking aside, I think she should continue to be on the bag forever. As long as she can.
Nah. I love my mom. My mom's wonderful. But fuck me, she does me. She does me adding. I love her to bits, but she is so annoying. I could not live with her again. Like, once you move out.
Oh, no. I'm 100% in that category, Bowen.
My mom is a wonderful woman. But I could not live with
that. No, I'm exactly the same.
I mean, I think, don't you think, though, at this point, he would have enough connections that if he wanted to be like, Mom, I'm going out with these dudes, and so-and-so is going to take care of it, and like, I think he wants her there.
Yeah,
he's not old enough to make that decision yet in America, is he?
I think he is.
You've got to be old. Well, he's not an adult.
You'd have to have a parental supervision of some sort, or like an adult supervisor.
If his mum's following him around like that at 16, she's not going to allow him. to be on his own in the country.
She's afraid he's going to start drinking beers.
If right, let's put it this way. We've all been teenagers. What were you doing at 16/18, Josh? What were you doing, Duffy? I was going down. I was going down and buying booze. I was going down the offie and buying booze every week. What would he be doing at 16?
I mean, he's not going to do that. He's like a freaking top athlete now, and he's concentrated on the sport.
You are so naive. You are so naive.
I feel like if you're just like on tour and you're average at that age, which I guess you wouldn't be on tour, but you'd be more likely to party a bit. You'd be there for the party, not for the competition, which I feel like he is
Josh, in it to win it.
That's why he's where he is.
Josh,
he doesn't want to go drinking.
How many rising stars have burnt themselves out from drink, drugs, all sorts? Maybe not in disc golf, but in sport as general.
That's what I'm saying. That disc golf doesn't do that to people yet.
Who was that one from Man City who was going to be the next amazing thing and just started getting bladdered, Duffer?
Could be any of them.
I can't remember who it was. But you can't let him out. Like, she won't let him out of her soul.
We get it, Bowen. You're too cool for your mom.
It's fine. I love my mother. I love
her. The question I was going to ask earlier was in regards to Drew Gibson and like the other players like Eric Oakley. People who have gone to... Because I'll just go back a little bit. There was obviously a big hoo-ha made about Ezra Adehold when he moved from a non-sponsored bag or play any disc bag to an individual sponsor. And obviously Eric and Drew have gone the other way in the off-season. So if that continues to be the case, do you think that you will start to see a narrower selection of discs in the sense of, like, if you could pick from any discs out there, you see Drew, for instance, going with the Destroyer, which he wouldn't have been able to throw before.
Yeah.
But he can now. So his sort of overstable sort of driver, he's choosing a Destroyer.
From your theory, everyone's deciding that the Destroyer is the best overstable driver. That's what you're saying. Whereas,
But that's what I'm wondering. What I'm saying is, I haven't seen Eric Oakley, what he's got in his bag.
Berg. Have you seen the Berg?
No, but in regards to, like, will you start to see a narrowing selection of people, what they use for overstable drivers, what they use for approach discs, do you see what I mean?
Are you saying that if everyone can have shared bags, they're all going to pick the Destroyer, or they could all pick the Destroyer?
Will they start picking the Destroyer and overlooking like the Zeus and similar discs from different?
I do feel like a lot of times there's just way too many options.
Yeah,
like it's just insane. I feel like, you know, most pros will tell you to get, you know, 6-7 molds and master them, you know, and now you got companies, I bet Innova's got, I don't know, 50 plus molds.
50, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, how do you decide what you want? I guess, I don't know. They're all slightly different though, aren't they?
Well,
they are, but this is what I mean. Because, like, for instance, with James Conrad, for instance, he's going to throw the Entropy for an overstable approach disc. Then Paul's going to throw Zone. Ricky now is going to throw the Harp. If they want to throw that disc, they have to throw those particular ones because they're sponsored by that company. However, if they're not sponsored by that company, will you start to see those same people who aren't sponsored by Infinite Disc, will they all throw the Zone or will they all throw the Harp? Will you start to see and get an idea of what is actually the best disc for that selection. Do you see, you understand what the question I'm asking?
It's subjective. Like, me and you might think the Destroyer's the best Stone Stable driver. Josh might think that...
PD2.
The what?
PD2.
PD2's the best overstable driver.
Like, I'm just giving you another option.
It's not subjective, exactly. The Cloudbreaker.
Yeah.
He might think that the... Cloudbreaker's the better disc.
Yeah, but I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying, is that... Do you think that's something that would come in?
No.
See, I think it will. I think you'll start to see the same mould being thrown over and over again.
You've got the first putter-only company, you know? Do you think they'll be, like, driver-only or mid-ranges-only company?
Not necessarily.
But surely the end game is to have your whole, because you're only picking a small, not a small, but you're only picking part of the market. Surely over time you build up your whole bag so that there's nothing missing, because otherwise you're only ever going to sell putters.
That's what they're trying to do, though. Yeah. I guess it's just be the masters of the putter.
Yeah.
And you've got to... overstable, stable, and understable now, and that with four different flexes and feels.
But you can get
you can find exactly any putter you want in that company that would suit you, I feel like.
You can do that with Innova. You can do that with Discraft.
Yeah, but you go into different molds and stuff there, aren't you?
Yeah, but you...
I don't know. It's very interesting. I still wish a company would just come out with an entire bag, so you have... three drivers of different stability, three fairways of different stability, mids, you know, approaches, putters.
There is a company that does that, but you would never throw them, you've said.
What?
Castor Plus.
No, that's not what you're saying.
No, they don't. No, I just feel like Josh is saying is like, bag, so
EV7's approach, but you've got three putters, you've got three mid-ranges, you've got three fairway drivers, three drivers. One of understable or lesser stability, one of sort of neutral, one of something more overstable.
What plastic
in each section?
What plastic?
Well, I guess that's the kicker. You'd have to do each set in each plastic, and that would kind of you wouldn't buy a whole set of all three of them or four of them, whatever you have, I guess.
What weight do you want, Judge?
Well, you can custom build it.
So you're talking about 9,999,000 different combinations.
I feel like we might have cracked why that hasn't happened yet. it's an interesting thought, though. I think because I personally think that's what you'll start to see, especially if more people go to non-specific sort of non-branded bags. I do think you'll start to see a narrowing down of selection, and you'll find that what the better disc is for that shot type.
I'm gonna say this now, and this is nothing against the sort of players who have a mixed bag, but the prestige is always going to be you have a manufacturer sponsorship, not a shop sponsorship. I don't see, Eric Oakley's a good player. Is he a top player? Drew Gibson's a good player. Is he a top player?
He is a top player.
He is now. And he did well at the Disc Golf Pro Tour Championships at the end of the season.
But
he won the first event of the year. I'd say he's top.
The prestige is to have
worldwide
the manufacturer sponsorship. It's like you look at F1, the manufacturers' teams are always much better than the sort of privateer teams.
For sure. But Drew's gone about it a different way, is where he had a full sponsorship and wanted an open bag. So
did Eric Oakley.
That was his choice.
That was Eric Oakley's choice.
Eric's on another level than Drew.
They're not on the same level.
Yes, but... Okay, then, so say Drew's done this now, and Eric's obviously made the move as well. So if they start winning multiple tournaments throughout the year, both of them, do you think that if big money deals comes in for individual sponsored teams, do you think they would then swap to that now? Because I don't think they will. I think they, if you offered every player on the tour the same money with a mixed bag, they would definitely take that option, I think.
Why don't we make it so that every player has to throw the same bag?
Well, that wouldn't then you'd do know very good for our shop, would it?
Well, I suppose.
Well, it's like Drew says, you know, he doesn't know. Or obviously it doesn't make you a better player, but he's more comfortable with these discs, which in return will make you play better mentally.
See, I agree. Yeah. I genuinely think if you offered 9 out of 10 pros the ability to throw a mixed bag or a one manufactured sponsored bag and you got the same money from both, 9 out of 10 would take the mixed bag, definitely.
Do you think Ricky would go back to the AVR?
Yeah. I think there's discs that he would pick out of that, from Innova. I don't think it would be completely Innova bag.
What's the comparable disc? Is it the Latitude Core, is it?
He's back on the Daggers.
Daggers.
It'd be Daggers, yeah. What about, is it the Judge as well? Is it the Judge that's the potter for Dynamic?
Judge, Warden.
Warden, that's
those are the one. Those are the two big ones.
They're pure for Latitude, isn't they?
Yeah,
which a lot of people play with. It's just an interesting, something I was thinking about when I was watching the disc golf on the weekend. And I thought, it's an interesting one to ask on the show. But
the question is, Duffy, you get paid £50 to play an MVP only bag, or you get paid £50 to play a mixed bag. What do you take?
Mixed bag. Definitely, I'd take a mixed bag.
Well, there's your question answered.
Now, if you said £50 for an MVP bag or nothing for a mixed bag, I'd take the £50 for the MVP bag, I suppose. But I'm not playing at the top level, so okie doke.
That was quite interesting. So I've sort of lost my way. So let's go back to the men. Calvin came third with 36 under, and Luke Humphries and Kevin Jones tied in four to round off the top five for the men. The women was Kat Allen, who did amazing. Paige Pierce second. Kristin Tatar in third. Hayley King and Evelina Salonen. Which is that correct?
It's a good effort. It's a good effort.
Which is great for us Europeans. So there you go.
Vanessa,
Team Vanessa, started off amazing on the first day at 3 under. Unfortunately, she couldn't keep up the pace, but she finished like in a respectable middle of the pack, didn't she? So
yeah, she missed out on the cash-in, but. Missed out on cashing, but she put a good performance for the first tournament of the season. It's a decent start.
Speaking of cashing, I think the longest cashing.
Well, yeah.
Cut it out.
Go for it. You say. I was agreeing with you.
It's just sad. The longest cash run in disc golf by Kayla Visca ended this past weekend.
2008. It's been going since.
Jesus. Dang.
And he failed to make it. But Nate Sexton was a couple of places above him. His was something like 216 tournaments that he's cashed in. And I think, did he just make the cash, did he? Or did he miss out as well?
I don't know.
I don't know the answer, but I know that people did swap around right at the end for the cash spots. But yeah, you're going to be pretty gutted to lose that streak.
Yeah, especially when you won the event the year before. Eagle won it the year before. No, I was talking about Nate, but that was Eagle last year, and then Nate before that.
Because Eagle threw the till upside down, didn't he, for the last shot.
Jerk.
Have you found mine at Croydon yet, Josh?
Where was it again?
In the Brambles.
On two.
You said you were going to look for it for me, and you haven't.
The Brambles, for some reason, have kind of died back just a bit. I guess because it's cold, but they seem thinner than they ever have, so maybe I'll go next time.
Jack Smith turns up with a purple tilt with a gold badge, a gold foil on the UK new and used, I'm claiming that straight off of him.
Right. I know nothing.
Anyone from Croydon who sells a used gold tilt with purple tilt with gold stamp, I know it's mine. And I will find you.
You'll probably find it's got lots of dents in it.
I've already sold it on the black market.
I bet you have. But what else we got? I have a special skill set and all that jazz. I will find you. Blue Bell would sign up for the Pro-Am tournament on the 14th and 15th of May. Has finally opened. Duffy's been pestering me for literally 9-10 months since the tournament last year. You have to come to Blue Bell. You have to come to Blue Bell.
Are you going to do it?
I'm in.
Nice.
I haven't got my van that I'm planning on putting a hammock up to sleep in. And I might end up just getting a car because I can't get a van. But I'm still in.
Scotland, friends.
Yeah, I can't wait. Since I left Blue Bells, I've just been thinking, when can I go back up? When can we make the trip back up there to go and play it? So looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So are you coming, Josh?
No.
No. Before the Pro-Am, they've got the spring sling there, haven't they? The UK women's event.
April the 9th to the 10th at Blue Bells is also the Spring Sling, which is it the first proper UK Women's Disc Golf Association event?
No.
They
had one at Nottingham last year, didn't they?
They had the one at Nottingham.
Which transferred to Quarry.
Yeah, definitely the first of the season.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Now, is that just women that can play? Do they not let dudes sign up?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It'd be interesting to find out. There's a load of stuff coming this year. Tournaments being announced all the time. Sign-ups being announced all the time. Get signed up early in January. My advice is people moaning on Facebook. Sign up for the ones that you can afford to sign up for now that you really want to do. And then you just have to wait and see if you can get onto other ones. Like, you can't have it both ways because you moaned last year that the tournaments were released too late. You're moaning this year that they're released too early and you can't afford it. Pick the ones that you want to do, the ones that you potentially want to do if they sell out. Tough titties.
Just blame everything on the BDGA and, don't take responsibility for anything.
Exactly.
Bowen's advice.
I think that a lot of tournaments aren't going to sell out straight away this year.
I would think this because it is my idea. Well, it was. I suggested it, but I feel like what
Tyler's ideas.
I feel like what I suggested. I mean, obviously, it's a learning curve. They're doing it in a different way this year, so there's always going to be sort of room for improvement. But I feel like what I suggested is probably going to be sort of the best bet in terms of people want to know early. That's been agreed. That's what was said last year. People want to know about the tournaments early so they can sort of manage their life around being able to go and play tournaments, basically. But equally, I feel like there should be some sort of restriction on how early you can put out for registration for tournaments.
Okay, if you're TD,
go on.
You get given all the events at the start of the year. You work at weekends, so you book off the 13th of September, the 12th of July for tournaments, the 8th of November, let's just say they're all weekends.
Yeah.
You put them off holiday. the tournament's released, the registration's released a month before the tournament, later on in the year. You, for whatever reason, don't get a spot because it sells out in 5 minutes.
Yeah, but none of them signed out, filled up that quick, though, have they?
Last year they did.
Yeah, they haven't this year.
No, I know. That's what I'm saying. So you don't need to worry if they release now. So, Clever Clogs, if they're released now and they're not sold out, why is everyone panicking?
Well, I think they did at first, for sure. But yeah, it's kind of leveled out, hasn't it? A bit. Yeah. Like, I'm playing 3 tournaments so far, which I didn't think I'd be playing at all. So, that's kind of fun.
I'm playing SummerSlam.
I've got
Wembley.
Yeah, I've got... What have I got? 1, 2, 3... I've got 4 two-dayers booked. And now we are at a point where my wife knows about 3 of them. So I've only got 1
You're doing good. You're doing really good.
I told my missus about the 2 yesterday, and she thought I was just going on a golf tour, like as in ball and club golf. So yeah. She thought, because I'm going away to Benidorm, like she thought at first I was going to Portugal, and then I had to let her know I was going to Benidorm. So there wasn't overly happy about that. And then yesterday, on the way back from Ross on Wye, which is an hour and a half from mine, I let her know that I'm going away for 2 weekends.
The thing is, though, you said before that she sees me as a good influence on you.
Yeah, she does.
There you go. So, yeah, if you tell her that I'm going,
she'll be all right. You're making out like there's jeopardy. There isn't. Kay's a good girl. So.
I actually did the thing last year because if I didn't put it in the calendar, Blair would like plan something, and then be in trouble and or not be able to go. So this year, as soon as I actually bought her a calendar for Christmas,
you pre-filled
it. All the dates on it.
Yeah. It's already paid dividends on one tournament while the in-laws are in town.
How many is she? Like, how many
I had 2. I had 2 planned for June, and one was the 4-day one, Jubilee Open, and then I booked the SummerSlam or put them both in the calendar. And then she was like, "Well, I got to do 1 out of 2." Basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
she found them, and she was like, "Oh, okay, well." I was like, yep, it worked.
I'll tell you one thing I haven't done this year, and I don't think I will, I don't think I'm going to be playing any of the pro events. I know, you know, you can sign up as in an MA1 division. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to be signing up for any of those and playing in MA1. I don't know, I just feel like it's just pointless because... I'm not going to challenge for anything, so I might as well just go and play a casual round somewhere. It's just going to be a lot less money.
Which is why I don't play a lot of tournaments anyway, because what's the point in going and getting battered by everyone and then losing your head and making it worse? I may as well. I'm playing 2 because I get to sort of have a bit of fun. I've been promised electric scooters at one of the tournaments, so that's why I'm going to that one. Not actually at the tournament, but in the weekend of it.
Whoa.
So, and then the other, I'll be promised the nicest course in the UK, so that's why I'm going on tour. It's not to go and win disc golf events.
So, we've got some good stuff coming to the shop in the next couple of weeks. Some big restocks. So... Yeah, so have a look at interchangeshop.com and see what we've got coming on there. And hopefully, I know I've been saying this for a few weeks now, but we should have a video coming out relatively soon. It's pretty much all done. We've just got to add a few bits to it, which Kane needs my assistance to do. And then it should be able to upload. So in about a fortnight's time, when it's finally uploaded, it takes forever to upload. When that's uploaded, we should be able to put that out on YouTube for people to watch. We had a good time doing, and that's it, I think, as far as like housekeeping type stuff. Have you got anything to add, Bowen?
No, just go to the shop and spend all your money buying all our discs.
Josh?
Nope. See everyone at Wembley Open and keep it in the chains.
Yeah.
Oh, before we do,
there is one more thing, actually, sorry. It feels nice now that I can finally say see you next week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We are back to a weekly schedule now, obviously, with the season starting.
Back to the grind.
So we'll see you all next week. And Josh?
Keep it in the chains. We've gotten good at that.
Thanks for listening to In the Chains. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel to view our round videos and course flythroughs. And hit subscribe there too. Until next time, keep it in the chains.